Your Last Meal is sponsored by Heritage Distilling Company. Craft and small batch vodkas, gins, and whiskeys. Drink locally, drink responsibly.
Cairo, Seattle.
I'm Rachel Bell, and I am crashing from sugar because I've been eating Halloween candy morning, noon, and night. And that's no joke. By the way, I have to say the name of the show. Welcome to Your Last Meal. Today on the, quote, free table at work, somebody brought Reese's pumpkins. They're in the shape of pumpkins. And who knew that they would be so different from regular Reese's? I think they are the superior Reese's.
Superior to regular Reese's.
This is a producer, Aaron. Yes, I think they have a better taste, a better texture, and they've contributed to the lethargic feeling I feel right now recording this podcast. So this is Your Last Meal, a show about famous people and the stories behind the foods they love most. Today on the program, the woman who can turn a one-syllable word into a five-syllable word with her southern drawl. The woman who most likely moisturizes her skin with a stick of butter. Celebrity chef Paula Deen's last meal. Hello, Paula. Good morning.
Hello, Rachel. How are you, dear?
I'm good. It's hard to just say Paula. You have one of those names that you have to say the first and last. It's just Paula Deen.
I've had people say, why do you call your children by the full name? Like Jamie Deen, Bobby Deen.
Oh, you too? Your own kids? I love it. Well, I hate to bring up an ex right at the beginning, but I was kind of chuckling this morning because I was reading about you and I didn't know that your ex's name was Jimmy Deen. And I'm like, of course she married a sausage.
His name is Jimmy Deen.
That's right. Well, let's...
And our first son was named after him. He's a junior.
Oh, wow. A junior sausage.
A junior sausage, yes.
Since we have limited time, I'm just going to cut to the chase here. The name of my show is Your Last Meal, and I interview celebrities about what they would choose for their last meal. So I'm curious, Paula Deen, mother of Jimmy Deen, what would your last meal be?
I think my last meal would be a very, very, very long buffet that took a long time to eat.
And what would some of the highlighted items be? What are the things that you crave the most?
It would be a thick steak, and it would be king crab and lots of potatoes cooked different ways. It would be candied bacon, and lots of pies, homemade pies, and more potatoes.
More potatoes. What is your favorite way?
And more meat.
Meat and potatoes. So what is your favorite potato preparation? Because you can do them 100 ways.
You know what? I adore. Potatoes, my favorite food, I think. I love French fries, but I love just a plain old baked potato with butter and sour cream.
So good.
So good. Just good, honest, straight up good food.
So how do you do your baked potato? I know it sounds simple, but I can never make mine at home taste like they do in the restaurant where you have like the really nice crispy skin and then the really creamy inside. What's your method?
Right. Well, it's so easy. You just first want to wash your potato, and then I just spray it with nonstick oil, you know, the kind you use when you don't want things to stick.
Uh-huh.
I spray it with that, and then I sprinkle it with a coarse salt, and then I bake it naked in the oven. You know, don't if you put it in tin foil, it's going to have a softer skin.
Right.
So just put it on a baking sheet and let her rip.
And how long do you have to bake it for?
You know what my favorite potato to bake is?
What?
A red potato. You can find them at certain stores big enough to bake.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, my goodness, they're so good because the skin will get crispy. But then when you cut it open, it's like mashed potatoes. It's
yes.
That consistency where an Idaho or something like that has more of a mealy texture.
Yeah,
I'm admiring your restraint with just butter and sour cream because there's no bacon or cheese or green onions or anything like that. You're being very reserved.
Yeah, my husband loves his loaded, but I just love the taste of butter and sour cream and chives if they have it.
I'm actually also surprised that your meal isn't more stereotypically Southern. So you have your big steak, you have your crab and your baked potato. Do you think that you've kind of burnt out a little bit, you know, doing Southern food all the time?
And I did fail to mention when I said more meats, that means fried chicken.
Okay.
I think it's my number one favorite Southern food. And at our restaurants, we have perfected that fried chicken, I think. I mean, I can't go in the restaurant without getting me a chicken leg. I can't do it.
Have you ever driven, eaten a chicken leg on the road?
Yeah, that would have been last Friday.
Oh! Chicken on the run.
When I left the restaurant, I had a book signing at the Lady and Sons, and I left with two chicken legs in my hand and ate them in the car.
Perfect. So I want to talk about a little bit about how you got your start. I know that you've been public talking about when you were in your 20s that you had anxiety and you were agoraphobic and you stayed in the house a lot. Is that where you started cooking? Were you cooking when you were in the house all that time?
You know, I did. My favorite pastime to keep myself busy and trying to stay away from negative thoughts was my kitchen. It was my lifesaver. And it was almost therapeutic for me to be in my kitchen, yes. And I come from a cooking family, Rachel. My grandmother and grandfather were in the restaurant and lodging business. And they had three daughters. And all three of the daughters were wonderful cooks also, one of their daughters being my mother. I didn't learn to cook. I never even went into the kitchen hardly until I married. And I didn't know how to boil an egg. But when I realized my mother was not going to come in there and cook for us, I started playing around. And I fell in love with it. So that 20-year ride with agoraphobia, it served me well, because it had me hone my skill.
So how did you go from someone who was so anxious that you couldn't leave the house to being an international television star who, you know, feels completely comfortable in front of the camera and goes around meeting people?
It sounds crazy, doesn't it? When I think about it, it sounds so crazy because I was always, you know, this girl that enjoyed being in the center of everything and had so many friends, but the unexpected death of my father when he was 40 years old, just, it changed my life. I was devastated. And then unexpectedly, my mother followed him in her death when she was 44. And I was left with a 16-year-old brother to finish raising, and I had two babies under three. And I was scared to death that something was going to happen to one of those. And I found I was just better off if I just stayed home and kept my children home. And I'm as close today to that 18-year-old girl as I will ever be. You know, I think I've come full circle, but I'll never forget. I can take you back to the house and where I was standing that morning when I got up, and the serenity prayer went through my head. And it was like I had just heard it for the first time. That prayer, I felt like at that moment, was written for me, you know, to have the serenity to accept the things I couldn't change, the courage to change the things that I could, and please God, give me the wisdom to know the difference between those two things. And I said, you know, that's it. That's it. I can't change what's happened. I've got today. God gave me today. So Paula, let's get on with it, girl. And, you know, I started getting better. It was not like an overnight thing, but, you know, I started expanding the areas for me to go to. And before you knew it, I started a little business called The Bag Lady with my $200, and the rest is history.
Wow. It's very inspiring.
Have you ever read my book, It Ain't All About the Cooking?
No, I need to.
Yes, I think you would enjoy the read, because it's been one heck of a ride, girl.
It sounds like it.
One heck of a ride.
But you're so far away from that time now. Do you ever get some of those feelings back, or, you know, have like a memory of like, who was that? Am I even the same person?
I know it. I feel like I've had several different lives in this one body. You know, I know how to combat it now, but no, I hadn't had a panic attack, knock on wood, in over 30 years.
That's amazing.
Yes.
So when you first started cooking, when you were at home, what was one of the first dishes that you were taught or that you taught yourself to make?
I think the first thing I tackled was spaghetti. I can't remember, but that sounds logical to me.
Huh.
I think that's what Paula, 19-year-old Paula, would have tried.
Paula Deen, it was so lovely speaking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rachel. Back to you. Pick up that book.
I will. I need a new book. Good luck on your book tour, and I can't wait to check out your new cookbook.
Thank you. At the Southern Table with Paula Deen.
Thanks, Paula Deen. Have a great day.
Thank you, too, Rachel.
Bye.
Paula Deen has maybe the world's best laugh. Let's see if I can do it. I can't.
No.
I can't do it.
Uh-uh.
But I laughed all through this. And if you, it sounded almost like fake laughter to me, but it wasn't. But when she would laugh, I would laugh. And it reminded me of, they have like laughing yoga that I accidentally went to once.
Really?
Which is, they start laughing and you feel really uncomfortable. And then you find yourself laughing because they're laughing and it's supposed to make you feel better. And it kind of does, but you don't know why you're laughing and you can't stop. And it's so weird. That's Paula Deen. To me.
Paula Deen.
I love how she said my name.
Rachel.
Hi, Rachel. She's so warm and friendly. So we're going to take a break, but when we come back, baked potatoes are to steakhouses as rice is to teriyaki joints. No, this is not an SAT question. This is something we're going to get the answer to from the Idaho Potato Commission. These are the potato people. Nobody does potatoes like Idaho. When we come back. It is cocktail hour with our sponsor, Heritage Distilling Company. And with the holidays approaching, you must get your paws on one of their spirits advent calendars, featuring 24 mini bottles in 12 varieties. I had a little chat with Heritage Distilling Company's Justin Stiefel. As a little Jewish girl, all that I ever wanted was an advent calendar. My parents wouldn't let me have one, and as an adult, I now know that they suck. They're filled with waxy little plastic dumb chocolates that don't taste good. But at Heritage Distilling Company, you guys have changed this. There are no bad chocolates in your advent calendar because you do a spirits advent calendar.
We have a spirits advent calendar. This is our third year of doing it. 24 minis, a variety pack, lots of goodness every day for the month of December, from December 1st through the 24th.
No drinking on Christmas?
There's lots of stuff to open Christmas morning.
Oh, okay.
The big bottle, the gift packs, you know, the specialty stuff.
What kind of spirits are in the advent calendar? What do you have in there?
It's a mix of some of the flavored vodkas, our coffee flavored vodka, which is very popular at Christmas time, our BSB 103, which is 103 proof version of that, and then some of the whiskeys.
Little yes. Airplane size bottle. Yep.
50 milliliter mini shots.
That's enough for one cocktail?
It's enough for one cocktail per serving.
Perfect. Get your spirits advent calendar at heritagedistilling.com. Paula Deen wants a baked potato with butter and sour cream for her last meal. I am drooling just saying those words. I don't blame Paula Deen because I love, and I wrote this on the paper here. I put about 14 O's in love. I love baked potatoes. I want one so bad. Do you love baked potatoes as much as I do?
I really, really do.
They are a magical and very simple food.
I think potato is potentially my last meal choice.
Just potato.
Yeah, in like all of its forms.
Oh, all of its forms. I learned about a place in my research for this episode called Potatopia. And it's an all potato restaurant. So you choose your base. You either get like a baked potato, mashed potatoes, tater tots, sweet potato fries, blah, blah, blah. And then you can just top it with whatever you want. They have hundreds of vegetables and meats and sauces. Doesn't that sound good?
That sounds real good.
When I was a kid and we were lucky enough to go to a fast food restaurant because my family didn't roll that way. But when my dad went on a business trip, my mom was like, get in the car. We're going to KFC. But when we would go to Wendy's, I would always order a baked potato, which is kind of weird when I think about it as an adult, like for a kid to order a baked potato. I didn't really dig on Happy Meals or hamburgers. Their baked potatoes were so delicious. You could get it with this bright orange melted cheese and broccoli. And I learned today that I was not the only one ordering the baked potato like I thought that I was. Wendy's sells a million baked potatoes a week. So we are going to talk to the king of the baked potato. His name is Frank Muir. He's the CEO of the Idaho Potato Commission, and he's going to fill us in on the history of the baked potato in America.
One of the our favorite stories goes back to the 1930s. A gentleman by the name of Dario Toffanetti owned six restaurants in New York, Chicago, and Florida. This was, of course, during the Depression times. And he's trying to be creative in finding economically way to fill up a plate and fill up his customers. And for some reason, he made a trip out to Idaho, and he saw this huge, large rail car of giant Idaho potatoes that were actually being sent off for cattle feed because they were too big. And he thought creatively how he could use them, and he bought the entire rail car. And instead of being shipped off to cattle feed and cut up and fed that way, they were shipped back to his restaurants in New York, Chicago, and Florida. And it was a way to give folks, his customers, a really interesting, unique experience eating this giant Idaho baked potato next to a steak that got a little bit smaller each time because of economic times. But no one complained about the smaller steak because they had such an incredible experience with the Idaho baked potato.
So was this one of the first times that people had had a baked potato? Is this not a food that was something that you would see a lot at home or on a restaurant menu?
It wasn't familiar because most people would cut them up. And you know, obviously, French fries go back. It goes all the way back to Thomas Jefferson's time when he introduced them into the White House. But just baking them up this way, particularly larger potatoes, was fairly new. You know, ovens needed to be a little more sophisticated because, you know, it takes a while to bake a potato, and the bigger the potato is, the longer it takes. And there was some belief that the bigger the potato got, perhaps it wouldn't taste as good. What Toffanetti found was it actually tasted great. Now, I could share one other story, too, which has kind of recently been celebrated. Back in 1926, Macy's really introduced the baked potato bar for the first time. This was in their Walnut Room restaurant in Macy's in Chicago, and they were the first to feature baked potato as a menu item. And it was so successful, it was immediately a successful item, that just recently, and I'm talking 2015, Macy's wanted to celebrate the 125th anniversary of the baked potato in their stores. And they invited us, the Idaho Potato Commission, to sponsor a very unique baked potato bar where we provided 125 toppings, different toppings, for the Idaho baked potatoes. And they served over 1,000 of these bakers.
And so what were some of the early toppings? Like back then in the 20s when Macy's had their baked potato bar, what were things that people would put on it then?
Well, no surprise, it would be butter and sour cream. Of course, that's Paula Deen's, one of her favorite items to put on her baked potato as well.
Do you know how the baked potato became affiliated with steakhouses? It's such a classic to have a steak and a baked potato.
You know, it goes back, and a lot of it really goes back to Toffanetti, because he was, again, in the early 30s when restaurants are trying to stay in business because, you know, this is during Depression. People aren't going out to restaurants to eat. So how do you get folks to come out and pay their precious money at a restaurant. Well, what you do is you put a smaller steak and a larger potato there, but the potato is high in satiety value, so you feel full. So folks would come in, have this wonderful meal, and people started complaining that Dario would give them too big a helpings, too much food. And during the Depression, no one ever heard something like that. So that was really, in my opinion, the beginning of the potato being next to the steak. And one of the things we have found is that when beef prices are going up, we'll see restaurants, high-end restaurants, will decrease their size of their fillets and increase the size of their potato, and no one complains about it. Because the first thing they say when that plate is set in front of them is, wow, look how big that potato is. They don't say, look how small that steak is.
So this Dario Toffanetti character that he's talking about seems to have had a flair for language, because I found online the copy that he used on his menus when describing baked potatoes. He calls them, quote, bulging beauty, grown in the ashes of extinct volcanoes, scrubbed and washed, then baked in a whirlwind of tempestuous fire until the shell crackles with brittleness.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he should write romance novels about baked potatoes. Baked potatoes were also a marketing tool for the Northern Pacific Railroad in the early 1900s. So like Frank said, back in the day, when a potato got too big, people thought it wouldn't taste good and they would end up feeding it to pigs. So the railroad discovered that these giant 2-pound Idaho potatoes were actually edible when they were baked. And they were beyond that. They were actually really delicious. And I'm sure they got them really cheap because they were being fed to the hogs. And they started offering them to diners on the North Coast Limited starting in 1909. And the baked potatoes were so popular that the railroad started calling their passenger service the Great Big Baked Potato. Northern Pacific actually mounted a huge 40-foot baked potato on the roof of its commissary in Seattle. They had electric lights that caused the butter to glow. They had eyes on the potatoes that winked with lights. And for 50 years, the railroad used the slogan, "The Route of the Great Big Baked Potato." One other fun fact, in October 1995, the potato was the first vegetable to be grown in space. NASA grew it, hoping that they might be able to feed astronauts up in space. All of this potato talk is making me very hungry. So after the break, I'm going to introduce you to the restaurant that makes my favorite baked potato. Hint, it's no longer the Sizzler or Wendy's. It is cocktail hour with our sponsor, Heritage Distilling Company. And with the holidays coming up, I'm so excited to tell you about the perfect gift, Heritage's Spirits Advent Calendars. It is genius. So instead of the classic Advent calendar, which is filled with terrible, waxy, inedible little chocolates, you get 24 little airplane-sized bottles of Heritage Distilling Company spirits in 12 varieties. And I was telling Heritage's CEO, Justin Stiefel, that growing up Jewish, I was always jealous of kids who got an Advent calendar.
Well, we're also coming out next year with the Spirits Menorah.
So we'll have you serious?
We're trying to find one appropriately sized, yeah.
Whoa, eight crazy nights of tiny alcohols?
Yes.
Are you serious?
We're trying to source some of the stuff for it.
Oh, my God.
We don't want to be sacrilegious, though.
No, we don't care. I will speak on behalf of all the Jewish people, from Reform to Orthodox, that we are fine with this invention.
We actually just had a rabbi come tour last week to show us how to become kosher.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for the production facility. So,
are you going to become kosher?
We're working on that.
We'll do it before Hanukkah so I can have my Advent calendar, right, please. Get your Spirits Advent calendar at heritagedistilling.com. When Paula Deen said she wanted a baked potato with crispy skin and creamy insides topped with butter and sour cream, my mind immediately went to my favorite baked potato, which is from a place called the Wedgwood Broiler in the Wedgwood neighborhood in Seattle. This is an old school place. It's from 1965. There's a lounge and then there's a restaurant inside. And you always want to sit on the lounge side. It is like going back in time. If you go in the evening for dinner, there are couples that treat this place like their own living room who eat here every night. These old couples who don't talk, who are eating liver and onions or London broil, looking past each other, watching golf on TV. It is amazing.
I haven't heard London broil in a long time.
Yeah, and this place is super affordable. It's like a really old-fashioned menu. What I love about it, I remember from my childhood, almost every time we'd go out to eat, you'd get, do you want rice pilaf, baked potato, or mashed potato? Do you want soup or salad? Like, dinner used to come with a bunch of food. Now everything's a la carte in the cities. You know, you have to pay for bread and butter on the side. So this is kind of a throwback. And the best thing, besides the baked potatoes at the Wedgwood Broiler, are their dinner salads, because they always come automatically with Cheez-Its and little bits of salami.
What?
Yeah, it's awesome. You have to go to the Wedgwood Broiler. But my favorite thing, which I will make a meal out of, is the baked potato. So I stopped in and interviewed the owner of the Wedgwood Broiler, Derek Cockbane.
They're wrapped in foil to start, and then we bake them, but they're really kind of steams them. And I think, so that's a little different than a lot of places do them. We put whipped butter margarine mixture on the top. We serve them with a side of sour cream, bacon bits, and chives.
Why did you decide to go with a half margarine, half butter?
I don't know why the original owners did that, but we've been doing that way a long time.
So that's been since 1965, since they opened?
Yes.
Margarine? Who uses margarine when you have butter? But I guess the Wedgwood Broiler, that's who uses margarine. I was thinking that maybe it's like when you make a grilled cheese sandwich and you use a good cheese, maybe a cheddar, you might add a slice of American cheese to contribute to the meltability. So I thought maybe the margarine adds an extra melty component that butter doesn't quite achieve. I'm not sure. Butter is pretty melty. But the point is, they use an insane amount of butter, about 10 times more than I would ever use at home. And when this baked potato comes to the table, it is positively foaming with butter. It looks like it has rabies. That's how much butter foam is coming out of this potato. Go to the Wedgwood Broiler, get a baked potato. They give you these little containers on the side with bacon bits and dehydrated chives, and then your sour cream. Their cocktails are super stiff. Their waiters are surly but friendly at the same time. It's 1965 every night at the Wedgwood Broiler. And that was Paula Deen's last meal. Paula has a brand new cookbook out right now. It's called At the Southern Table with Paula Deen. I suggest picking up a copy before the holidays and bringing a lot more butter into your life. Thanks to Frank Muir, CEO of the Idaho Potato Commission, and thanks to the Wedgwood Broiler for my favorite... Ooh, I forgot to tell something before. Okay, I'm going to start that over. Okay. And thanks to the Wedgwood Broiler. I don't know if I should say this because I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but one time when I went to the Wedgwood Broiler and I ordered a baked potato, the server recognized me. She's a fan of the radio show that I do. And I told her how much I love the baked potato. About 15 minutes later, I went to the bathroom. And when I came back, my half-eaten baked potato was replaced with a brand new baked potato.
Oh, no.
Foaming with butter and sour cream. Yes. And I felt like if I just left every 15 minutes, this potato would go on infinity. It would just keep living on, and I could just eat this baked potato until the day I die. So I'm looking at you, anonymous server, who I will not name. Thank you for making my life better. This episode was produced by Aaron Mason and me, with original music by Prom Queen, who has a brand new album out now. It's called Doomwop. Find it at promqueenmusic.com. And we can't end the episode without being pathetic and asking you to tell us that you like us. Do you like me? If you like me, you don't have to like me. If you like Aaron, if you like podcasts, just review it on iTunes. It actually makes a big difference. Tell your friends, subscribe, and thank you very much. I'm Rachel Bell, and this is Your Last Meal.